Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Sunday marks the 10th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11. A decade has gone by. This show was born in those first traumatic days after the attacks. From the beginning, we've talked with people who were close, too close, to Ground Zero and its terror and its victims. Today, we've invited some of them back. Good people, friends now, with the closest of perspectives on that day. This hour on Point, our front row guests from then, thinking now about the memories and meaning and impact of 9/11. You can join the conversation. How do you think of 9/11 now, 10 years on? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear today from banker Jimmy Dunn, whose firm on the 104th floor of the South Tower lost 66 employees on 9/11. From Cindy McGinty, whose husband died on the 99th floor of the North Tower. From Peg Oganowski-Hatch, whose husband was a pilot on American Airlines Flight 11, the first plane to hit the towers. With us first today from New York City is Beth Fertig, senior reporter for WNYC, the NPR affiliate in New York. On the morning of September 11, 2001, she rushed to the scene, sound kit in hand, to record what was happening. She was there as the towers fell. She reported and reported and reported. Here's a little bit first from the day after the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center, with Beth Fertig and her colleague Marianne McCune, had this report on the immediate aftermath. You'll hear Beth first here, then Marianne and more.
Loretta Williams sat with a colleague from the Port Authority, whose office was in one of the towers. They had walked down 82 flights of stairs.
We just shook up.
Tell me what you saw with the people. Were people okay? Tell us that.
No, a couple of people got burned. Their skin was coming off. They got burned. We were just trying to get out safe. That's all we was concerned about.
Several witnesses, including Denny Cito, said they saw people jumping out of the buildings.
As the fire was progressing, I saw people jumping off the tower, literally just jumping off the tower without any ground support whatsoever. It was not a pretty sight.
Everywhere, people were trading stories, gazing south in shock. And then, what was left of the familiar skyline vanished completely when the second tower collapsed less than an hour after the first. I was with my colleague, Marianne McCune, when we heard the blast. We were reporting live on the air and were asked to describe what we saw.
That's what we were seeing before.
It's gone. It's gone. Marianne, can you see it? Marianne's
I can't
here.
See anything.
We can't see anything of Tower 2.
Beth Fertig was that close and this close, looking on as the first World Trade Tower fell.
The building is falling right now. People are running through the street. Smoke is everywhere.
She was among those running. In the weeks after 9/11, she was good enough to take the time to join us. Beth Fertig, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for being with us today. We really appreciate your responding. I know you don't cover security any longer. You don't cover terrorism. This is no longer your beat, Beth, and that's by choice, I understand.
Yeah, I now cover the New York City public schools. I actually used to cover politics, and that's part of what my assignment was on 9/11. Originally, I was supposed to cover the mayoral primary that night. We had a Democratic and Republican primary that day, and I was supposed to be covering politics. And yeah, over the years, I became more involved in covering education, and that's what I do now.
In these next few days, the whole country is going to be reliving in one way or another that day's and those events. You were so much closer than most of us, though there were those closer still and those who died, as we well know. But how do you handle this anniversary every year? And what about this year, Beth? Do you still take it all on board? Do you hold it at arm's length? What's your relationship 10 years on with that day, those events?
I always feel a little uncomfortable around this time of year. I, you know, feel very overwhelmed by the amount of attention that the event gets, and it's especially so now. It's just pervasive. It's everywhere. You can't turn on any channel, you know, without hearing it or pick up anything. And you know, as a journalist, I always question, you know, how much attention is too much to stories. But, you know, you just can't help but also feel a personal connection to something that you were not only covering, but you felt, I felt an involvement in as a witness. But you know, I also honestly, I'm not affected the way other people were who actually lost family members and spouses. And, you know, I was a journalist. I was a witness to it, but I wasn't personally affected the way other people were. So, you know, I think I've moved on, you know, with my life, which a lot of people do in different ways. And, you know, I just note it every year as, wow, this was an amazing, horrible thing that happened in the city. And I just sort of look at New York as being a really strong place full of amazing stories. You know, there's over 8 million people living here. They've all been affected in different ways, but mostly they go about their business and the city has moved on. And we really generally don't think about it that much, except this time of year.
Do you revisit those streets, that site, Lower Manhattan, Beth?
No. I work nearby. WNYC, mm-hmm. part of our story was that our radio station used to be located in the Manhattan Municipal Building, which is across the street from City Hall. And that was just a couple of blocks north and east of where the Trade Center stood. And so every morning, you know, when I went to work, I would look up when I left the subway and see the two towers there on my way into the office building. And then we moved to Soho. We have our own building now, which is still downtown, mm-hmm. not very far away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can't help but see the neighborhoods and stuff like that. But I don't go down there. And, you know, when I do, maybe it's to use the PATH train to visit a friend in New Jersey, or maybe I have to go down to the Wall Street area. But it's weird. You know, I definitely feel very weird when I see the site now, because instantly I'll try to imagine what used to be there,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
try to re-envision it. And then mostly I'm just blown away by what is going on now. You know, for years there was not a lot of progress, and that was the story. And now it seems like there's so much progress. You know, every day you see another floor going up in the biggest building there, the new One World Trade Center, and the PATH station, which is the train to New Jersey, and the subway station, and now the memorial site, you know, with the waterfalls and the tree plantings. So it's pretty breathtaking when you see the pace of things now and how different it looks.
Beth Fertig with WNYC, it's very good of you to be with us today and ride along as we talk with people who came very close to those events, for whom those events pushed right into their lives. Please stand by for just a second in New York. There's more we want to know from you, Beth. But also with us right now from Hartford, Connecticut, is Cindy McGinty. We first spoke with Cindy in the months after 9/11 and many times since. Her husband, Todd, worked for Marsh McLennan. He was on the 99th floor of the Tower 1 when the first plane struck. Their sons, David and Daniel, were 7 and 8 at the time of Mike's death. That makes them, of course, 17 and 18 now. Cindy McGinty, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
Beth has moved on. You just heard her say, very deliberately, you know, very intentionally. And I'm sure there's much that doesn't and can't move on. But here we are 10 years, Cindy. How's it sitting with you? Is moving on possible for you with the loss of your family took?
I would say it's more moving forward in a mm-hmm. really deliberate way. I think some things that have happened over the last few years have made that possible for us. I think I've reframed what happened to us. My oldest son had a lot of struggles and is now doing quite well. I moved him into college over the last week or so.
Good. Congratulations.
Yeah. I know. It's a big step for him. I've gotten involved in a lot of activities. I'm a founding member of the Mass Military Heroes Fund, which has given me a lot of purpose. I'm also on the board of an organization called My Good Deed, which has been instrumental in having September 11th declared as a National Day of Service and Remembrance. And I think that has given me a place to have meaning and purpose on September 11th. And I think that's helped me find where I can spend the day and the weeks leading up to that day in a useful way for myself.
Your sons are young men now, Cindy. Do you talk about it with them?
They're very close to the chest with it. Daniel will be at school this year. It's the first time I won't be able to sort of get to him mm-hmm. and spend the day with him. But he chooses to keep it close to, I would say, his heart. He chooses who he tells and who he doesn't tell, and this is a new beginning for him. David has had his struggles this last year, and I think he also would rather fly under the radar, and they don't talk much about it. I think David in particular has never really dealt with his dad's death. You hear a lot about resiliency in kids, but I think what we're not hearing are the stories of the kids that are not so resilient. And that bothers me a bit because I think that the world sees all of these kids as having this sort of bright and happy future, but I'm running into more and more families now that it's been 10 years and many of these kids are facing adulthood and not all of them have been able to incorporate it and move forward in such a on such a smooth path.
And what about you, Mom? Anger, sorrow, hope, all of the above?
I'm very hopeful, and I feel like I've found a way to move forward in a really positive way that Mike would be proud of. I think all of us in my family have finally been able to accomplish that. I think he would look down and smile on us as a family that we've managed to pull together and move forward. I'm very hopeful for the future.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with people who talked with us in the days and weeks and months after 9/11. We're approaching the 10th anniversary this Sunday. It's hard to believe that a decade has gone by, but it has. But the events of that day still seared in the memory of everyone. And we're talking with people who were close, too close, to the events of that day, to the victims of that day. We're honored to have them back with us to get their feelings as we all try and work through 10 years later what that meant, what it means now, how we hold it in our own minds. Beth Fertig is with us, reporter, senior reporter for WNYC. Their offices were very close to the World Trade Center on that day. You heard her vivid reporting, her feet pounding away as she ran as the first tower fell but captured that sound. She joins us from New York, from Hartford, Connecticut. Cindy McGinty is with us. Her husband, Mike, then 42, was on the 99th floor of Tower 1 when the first plane struck the Twin Towers. We've talked with her many times since then. Here's a little bit of tape from 9 years ago in 2002, just before the one-year anniversary of 9/11. Cindy McGinty joined me on Point, along with our news analyst, Jack Beatty, to talk about what it was like for a private death in the family to be so very public.
Turning on the TV and watching it on TV or getting notes from people that we don't know. On the one hand, it's very heartwarming to know that the country's behind us. But on the other hand, I want to make it go away. I want to make it normal. And I can't do that. That was taken away from me the day that first airplane hit the tower.
And it never will go away.
It won't. My kids are going to be the ones 10 years from now in history classes reading about this in history books, and I just pray that they have a teacher who knows who they are and what happened to them.
Who knows who they are and what happened to them. Her sons, Daniel and David, now 17 and 18, and not so sure they want to share with everyone. It's still not so easy for them. We're going to be joined in just 2 seconds by Jimmy Dunn, Senior Managing Principal at Sandler O'Neill Investment Bank. We first spoke with him on the first anniversary of 9/11. On September 11th, his firm's offices were located on the 104th floor of the South Tower. 66 of his coworkers died that day. 74 children lost parents. Here is a little bit of our conversation with Jimmy Dunn on the one-year anniversary of those attacks, talking about the work he was doing then to remember the friends and colleagues he lost that day.
I'm asked sometimes how have my priorities changed, and I'm proud to say that I've learned nothing in terms of my priorities from those demented evil people that perpetrated this murder on us. But as far as the intensity of my priorities, when I hug my kids and think about that so many of my great friends no longer have that privilege, no longer get to put them to bed at night, that I didn't think I could appreciate all that I had more. But I think I do.
Jimmy Dunn, Senior Managing Principal at Sandler O'Neill. He was in the thick of it on that day, out for dry cleaning. So he survived when so many of his colleagues did not. He joined us years ago, and he joins us again today. Jimmy Dunn, thank you very much for taking the time today. It's very good to have you back with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be with you.
The years go by, and they go by. First, tell us about your company. It was hit and hit in a terrible way on that day. What's happened with Sandler O'Neill in the years since, Jimmy?
Well, we've had the support of our clients and new clients and old clients and friends, and we had everybody in the whole country rooting for us and helping us. So we're proud to say that we have, we're 365 strong now as compared to down to under 100 after the attacks. And our business has grown, and we're quite strong. And as I've often said, with the exception of the senior managing principal, I think that we are deeper and stronger in every area. Not that we wouldn't be that much better if we had all the people we had, but I think they'd respect and they'd appreciate what we've done in their absence.
How do your colleagues carry the memory of all those colleagues, 66 partners and employees who died on that day? Do you talk about them? Are there plaques on the wall? How do you make it honorable?
Yeah, well, we have references to that day through in the office, and actually in March of 2012, we're gonna, it just shows you how time goes. We're going to be moving to the west side, so we'll do something over there as well. But we have, I guess, after the attacks, we were under 100 people, and we still have north of 55 that are working at Sandler that were here on that day 10 years ago. So it's ever-present, and I think that to the credit of the people here that have come post 9/11, they understand what this is about, and some of the reason that they're here is because how we responded to it. So it's not separate and distinct. It's very much part of our culture, and it's who we are. We don't run from it. We live with it every day, and we it's a source of some inspiration to all of us.
And Jimmy, remind us just once more. There won't be many anniversaries when we look back this way, I suppose. But well, maybe there will. But what happened on that day? Why were you not there? How did you figure out what was happening?
Well, I think you said something about I was out for dry cleaning. That my wife would have gotten a chuckle out of that. No, I was out trying to qualify for a golf tournament in upstate New York.
And the
official came out and said to me that, after a little discussion, he wouldn't tell me. And I said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Oh, my kid's fine." And he said, "It's nothing to do with your wife and your kids. You need to call your office that a plane has hit the World Trade Center." And I just assumed it was like a Piper Cub, and I'd said, "Did it even break a window? What did it do?" Because I was thinking maybe it hit specifically on our floor, and we have offices that are right against the windows, so maybe some one person was affected by it.
Yeah.
And he said, "No, it's not that kind of plane. You need to call your office." And then I went back and called my house, and my wife was upset, and then I started to get the facts that this was not a Piper Cub. This was a 757 or 747. It was significant, and it was very serious.
74 children of your employees and partners lost a parent on that day. What have you been able to do for them, Jimmy?
Well, we've started a foundation, which we started immediately after, and with the good help of Tim Neer and Andy Armstrong and Chuck Whitmer, who run the foundation. I'm not allowed to run it because I'm allowed to raise money for it, which I've done, and give money to it, which we've done. But they run the foundation, and so they have for all the time for the last 10 years have been interacting with the families, and we'll provide full educational response to everyone. So any child that was related to one of our Sandler people, we pay for their educations in its entirety, and if they're smart enough to get into Brown, Duke, Notre Dame, you name it, they can go, or whatever we can do to help them. If it's a secondary school, we'll do that too. And there are some exceptions for other families that didn't have children that will try to do something in memory of their parents. But we've received a lot of wonderful letters, and most of the letters revolve around that they're relieved that their mothers are more relieved, and makes us proud.
Jimmy, we've got Beth Fertig with us from WNYC, Cindy McGinty, who lost her husband Mike on that day. Beth says she's moved on. Cindy is looking to move forward. How do you hold that day in your heart, in your mind now?
Well, everyone can say whatever they want to say, but it's with you, and it's you have to decide how to deal with it. And I didn't lose a child, or I didn't lose a husband or a wife. I lost my closest friends in the whole world. But for me, we had the firm. And the firm, for me, was a weapon that I felt that if we were to respond and respond successfully and do the opposite of what bin Laden would have liked us to do, that was the response that I needed. So for me, putting on the Brooks Brothers suit and getting down to the office and rebuilding it was exactly where I wanted to be and exactly what I wanted to do, and it continues. It doesn't have quite the same intensity at going to work today as it did 10 years ago, but it's still there. And so for me, that was the response that we had to do. And when I get a letter from one of the kids that said Brown or Princeton or wherever, and they're appreciative, that makes me feel good. When we get a letter saying that someone's proud about how we behaved, and you know that's the way I can respond to it. But I, as I said, I didn't lose my wife, I didn't lose my children, I lost my closest friends, and I know what they would have wanted me to do. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind about that. So in that sense, it was easier for me. I had no option. There was one thing to do, and you either get it done or you die trying. It's very simple.
Jimmy Dunn, Cindy McGinty, Beth Fertig, it's an honor to have all of you with us today. We have callers lined up to join as well, if I may. Angelique in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Angelique, thanks very much for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
I was there that day on the 77th floor, and I was there for a sales meeting, so, you know, my story is different from many of the people that you have in your panel today. I was there for a sales meeting and living in California at the time.
Which tower? Which tower were you in, Angelique?
Well, strangely enough, when I arrived that day and I went, they required you to get a name tag, a photo ID, and I just went up to the North Tower and I realized that I was in the wrong place. So I went back down, went to the South Tower. I was there for probably 15 minutes when my manager said, there's an explosion next door, we need to get out. And so, you know, just we followed him out.
Did you walk down 77 flights? Was that your way out?
That was our way out, yes. But at one point, we did, you know, as I'm sure you know, there was an announcement, the Port Authority made an announcement that it was safe to go back into our office, into our offices. And I know many people did go back to their offices, and many people stayed in their offices. We looked out the window. We, you know, got out of the stairwell, looked out the window, and I could see the debris flying out the window, and I couldn't believe that it was an accident. And so we decided to get back into the stairwell and just continue our way down. We did feel the impact of the second plane hit our building that day.
And you got out and you survived. How do you look back on that day? How do you hold it in your heart, Angelique?
Well, the good news is that when I did get home a week later, I found out I was pregnant. So, sorry, for me, it's a day of thinking about what could have been lost. And I know so many people lost so much of that day. And so I'm so incredibly grateful that my child gets to play hockey and gets to have birthday parties. And so I think as a survivor who, you know, wasn't injured, I didn't lose a family member. It's especially this time of year, it's very challenging. I think seeing the media and also hearing people say, get over it. It's hard to hear that. It's really hard to hear that. I think I also struggle with, my son's 9 years old now. I don't know what, and I don't know how to tell him.
He doesn't know yet that you were there on that day?
He doesn't. No, he doesn't.
How old do you think he'll be when you tell him?
I'd really like to tell him this year. I just, I know that because of the way I feel still, that I don't know that I could calmly tell him and not have him be impacted by this. You know, I am very fearful of flying. I mean, you know, I have a lot of fear, and so I don't want to put that on him. One of your other panelists was talking about, you know, her children being in school and hearing about this, and I know he needs to know. It's just a challenge. How do you separate yourself from this situation? And
this might be the time, Angelique. I really appreciate your call. We're so glad you got out with your life and more. And I appreciate your calling. Thank you so much, Angelique. Cindy McGinty, how do you weigh the fates of different people and families on those days? You know, here's Jimmy, who wasn't in the tower. Here's your husband, who was. Here's Angelique, our caller, who was, and then she wasn't, who got out. Have you come to terms with the fact that fate was dealt out in very different ways to different people and families over the years?
Tom, I never thought about that a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are where you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest, Mike was there the first time the tower was bombed.
Back in 92, 93.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was meeting a friend for lunch there. I think I look at it more, it is what it is. I can't change it. I can't change that Mike was there for a meeting or somebody else wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I never went there. The only place that I did go to comfort myself was that Mike believed in God. And for me, that made me feel better because I believe God was with him. He had a great faith, and that helped me.
Jimmy, we've only got you for another minute and a half here. How do you think about the way the country has responded? There's been so much response in these 10 years in so many directions at such scale. You're a business guy. You size things up. You assess things. How have we done in our response to what came so close to you?
I think the notion that people will forget is, I find that hard to believe. I mean, I, and if you see about the response, particularly, of course, it's the 10th anniversary, not another one. The response has sort of been overwhelming, I think, in terms of the way people have remembered.
I guess I mean the wars, the reaction, the everything else we've done.
The wars a mistake. We need to get out of there. I sort of side with what Tom Friedman has talked about, that you know that September 11th was not our day. September 11th was their day. Our day has got to be September 12th. And our days did 4th of July. And, we can't be chasing these mad. We're chasing the wrong people. I mean, we obviously have to be aware of these people. It's like finding a needle in a needle stack, not a haystack. We have to deal with them. But we can't be obsessed with them so that we lose our way of life. And, this is a dangerous place, and there are people that begrudge Americans and free people all over the world, and that's part of the price of being an American. And we need to accept that and understand that we need to look about what's going on in China, look what's going on in Brazil, what's going on in the rest of the world, and advance and compete in that way. And you know, that's my view of it. September 11th was their day. September 12th should be our day. And maybe it took a decade to understand that.
Jimmy Dunn, we'll think of you on 9/11 and 9/12, and we're grateful to you, and we wish you well. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are circling back this hour to important key voices for us from 9/11, those days, to people who spoke to us when the shock was new, when the story was young, to hear them again, their perspective as we reach 9/11's 10th anniversary this weekend. We've been talking with Beth Fertig, reporter for WNYC. She was right there in the shadow of the towers on that day. You heard her earlier in the hour running with the sound of the towers coming down behind her, right there. Cindy McGinty is with us. First spoke with her in the months after 9/11. Her husband, Mike, was 42 on the 99th floor of Tower 1 when the first plane struck. He died there. They have two sons, David and Daniel, now 17 and 18 years old. Joining us right now, she's on the road north of Boston, Peg Oganowski-Hatch. We were in the middle of the show back in March of 2002, just months after, 6 months or so after the attacks. It's a call-in show, and she called in. Her husband was Captain John Okanowski. He was the pilot of American Airlines Flight 11. That was the first plane, of course, to hit the towers. He left three daughters. She's remarried since. Peg Okanowski Hatch, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, be careful as you talk with us on the road, Peg, but we're honored to have you with us. I think back all the way back to March 2002, you probably can't even remember, but we were so surprised to have you call in at that time to share, and we were honored, and we treasured it. But to call in and share, how have you thought over all these years about communicating about what happened on that day when your husband was right there at the nose of the plane, Peg?
Well, I'm always willing to talk about it. It's not something that I'll bring up on my own, but if somebody does want to talk about it, I'm very willing to. I think it needs to be remembered, which we do. And as I said, I'm willing to go there when it's necessary.
Your husband John was captain of American Airlines Flight 11. You were a flight attendant at the time of the attacks for American Airlines. Do you still fly, Peg?
I did take an early retirement in 2009, but at the time I was a flight attendant with American Airlines, and John and I both flew the same trip, just not at the same time. I flew Flight 11 all the time, and I flew our transcontinental trip to San Francisco all the time.
I guess by fly, you've got a professional's interpretation. I mean, simply, do you still get into airplanes and take flights?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The last few months, it just worked out that I've been on three trips across the pond, as we say, over to Europe, once to visit my daughter who was studying abroad, once to visit my husband's daughter who was studying abroad, and another time because my husband wound up with a business trip, so I went over. I have no fear of flying.
That's great. Peg, you know Cindy McGinty who's with us. Peg, say hi to Cindy. Cindy to Peg, it's good to have you two together here.
Yes, hi Cindy.
Hi Peg.
We see each other. And,
we do.
We go back and forth with emails occasionally, so Cindy and I do keep up with each other.
Peg, how have you dealt over all these years now with the fact of what happened, with the anger, the sorrow, the hope? How do you hold those things?
Well, you do go through all of the emotions. They resurface at different times. They can have different triggers. But ultimately, what we do, what people have always done, is you integrate it into your life. And you move forward because that's all we can do. Or else you'd get yourself in a terrible place. And I think that would be the worst thing that you could possibly do. Moving forward, living well is, I think, a wonderful way to honor those who didn't get to live out their lives.
And how about John? How do you honor him now? Is it, you know, I'm sure you've... how do you honor?
Well, one of the ways is to enjoy my daughters and the path that they've taken in their lives. Another way has been with the help of his brother Jim. Actually, it's all Jim. We've kept his farm going, thriving. He's built it up.
In Dracut, Massachusetts, yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a thriving business, and Jim's done a tremendous job with building on what John had already done.
Beth Fertig, excuse me for a moment, Peg. We got Beth Fertig with us at WNYC, and Beth, you said, and you have in your life, moved on in many ways. You hear these people who were so intimately affected by it, loved ones who died, colleagues who died. Do you feel a difference, Beth, in the way you now relate to 9/11 and the way these people who actually
you know, paid even more direct price relate to it, Beth?
I hear all different stories from people that I've interviewed over the years about it. And, you know, there's no one way to grieve or to hold on to a tragic event or cope with it. Some of my favorite stories are really creative ways that people have come up with to honor somebody. I remember last year, maybe it was last year, the year before, talking to a widow who would honor her husband who died at the Trade Center by going with her kids to a park and eating his favorite meal, which was, I think it was Dr. Pepper and some saltines.
Yeah.
And they would feed it to a tree that they had planted in his honor. They would sprinkle it around the tree. And for them, that was just a really sweet way of honoring him and looking at a new form of life, you know, the tree, but also remembering him and something really quirky about him. I know people who have been deeply affected, who have a woman in this documentary that my coworker Marianne produced, which is called Decade 9/11, and I do want to put in a plug for it because it's really about New Yorkers and how they've dealt with this. And there's a woman who was a school safety agent who rescued a sanitation officer that day who we profile. And when we went to visit her in her apartment, she still had a little kind of shrine to 9/11 because she was so deeply involved in it. And she had some Trade Center memorabilia awards and plaques that she had gotten. And so she really made it a part of her life, but she also felt like she had dealt with it by, you know, talking to a counselor, going to church. She became very, very involved in her church, and she's very spiritual. And so she sort of pays it an honor, you know, every day in her life by having it there in her house. But she also feels like she's, you know, a whole person with other things going on in her life. But the man that she became best friends with, who she rescued, he's had a much harder time for whatever reasons and has nightmares. And so everybody's got their own way, you know, personally, because, like I said, I didn't lose anybody. So I don't have a particular person that I'm grieving. It's more like an event that was dramatic that is always going to be part of me because I was there and I covered it. And it's a loss to our city that I feel whenever I don't see those towers in the skyline. And yet, as I've said, you know, New Yorkers do go on in their own ways. And, you know, I think about it every year because I can't not, you know, I remember what I was doing. I remember what happened. And I'll never get over the image of watching those two towers fall and knowing that I witnessed the death of, you know, almost 3,000
people.
But I also know that I can't think about that all the time or it would drive me crazy. Yeah. And, you know, I get a little anxiety every now and then about this anniversary because, you know, I don't want to look at the images. It's very upsetting. But I also feel like, you know, the most beautiful thing that I see every year is that tribute in light. When New York does the beams of light that go up into the sky that represents the two towers. And it's just this beautiful artistic statement. And it's like filling the skyline again. And it's just, you know, you just feel like really proud as a New Yorker to see, you know, we're still here. And, you know, in those days afterward, I felt like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Are they, what are they going to do next? You know, and I was interviewed by the museum. They have a whole thing about 9/11 and the media in Washington. And I remember saying something like, you know, we'll never be the same. Well, that's true, but it's not true. You know, here we are. We're still this incredible melting pot of a city where you see people in different neighborhoods who may not get along in their own countries, but they deal with each other here. And, you know, you ride the subway with people from all over the world. And it's that only in New York type of energy that you'll never get anywhere else. And New York is always rebuilding and it's always becoming a new place because of the people who come here and the energy that they have. And so that's what I mean when I say New York is still here, you know?
Peg Oganowski-Hatcher, no, I have to let you go. You're on the road there. How will you spend the actual anniversary this Sunday, Peg?
This Sunday, I will be going to Boston, and there are a number of ceremonies going on, starting with a wreath-laying at the memorial in the public garden. There will be a reading of the names on the State House steps, and then a ceremony in the State House where an award is presented to someone who exhibits civilian bravery in honor of Madeline Amy Sweeney, who was a flight attendant on John's flight who made a phone call that was able to lead to the identification immediately who the hijackers were. So And then later on, we go to Fenway Park, and my whole family gives blood. The American Red Cross does a blood drive in conjunction with the Red Sox to honor the families, which ties into the idea that we would like to see 9/11, in addition to being a day of remembrance and reflection, be a day of service in honor of the people who died that day.
That in Boston, where the flight originated, Peg Ognoski-Hatch's then-husband John was captain of American Airlines Flight 11. She joins us today from the road north of Boston. Peg, thank you so very much for being with us. Honor to all your memories and your family in this week. Thank you, Peg.
Thank you.
Let's get a call right here. Daryl, he's on Interstate 81 northbound in Virginia. Daryl, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, you're on the air, sir.
Hey, my wife and I are truck drivers, and we found ourselves about 2 years before the towers fell, about once or twice a month, we would be over there in New Jersey at Perth Amboy while our truck was being loaded. We would park our tractor near the water, and we would be eating our lunch looking at the Twin Towers across the water.
Yeah,
and that became a regular thing, maybe once or twice a month for a number of months. And then we moved back to Austin and became local drivers, and I was enjoying a really blissful summer, a lot of fun. I had a friend. We go bike riding, swimming, and it was just a morning thing. And so this morning, when I showed up for our swim, and we stepped inside his apartment, and on the TV, we watched the Twin Towers fall. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just want to speak as a citizen who said, I hurt. I have a hole in my heart for what we lost, what was close to me, what was near and dear. And I guess I hurt because of those who lost family members, but it's just very real to me, the painful loss, and I hope that what I'm saying will be the words of or the feelings of others American citizens who hurt also.
I'm sure they are, Daryl, and I appreciate your call. I appreciate the memory of the beauty of those days before as well. Our time grows short. Cindy McGinty, how will you spend this Sunday?
Well, it's very important to me that, like the last caller said, that I know that America was hurting on September 11th, but I want everybody to remember that the terrorists thought they were going to tear us apart, but what they did was bring us together, and that they did not win or succeed in what they were trying to do. So on September 10th, I'll be in Foxborough for Family Fun Day, and that evening they're going to dedicate a memorial to 9/11. And then on September 11th, I will be packing 1,000 care packages for soldiers overseas with the Mass Military Heroes Fund as part of a joint effort between some of the 9/11 families and the Mass Military Heroes families. And it's part of the National Day of Service and Remembrance, where I would encourage everybody to remember and pay tribute to someone who died on September 11th.
Cindy McGinty, her husband Mike, was on the 99th floor, died when the first plane struck in the Twin Towers, joining us today from Hartford, Connecticut. And Cindy, over all these years, you've been very generous, and we appreciate your generosity again today. Our best to your family, and our thanks to you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Beth Fertig, who was there reporting, I don't know if heroically is the right word. I would use it, Beth, but dutifully and well as it happened. Moving on now, 10 years later, with WNYC. Beth, thank you very much for being with us today. We're grateful to you as well.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Listeners, we're going to end this hour with music from Daryl Bodley. His daughter Dora was killed on United Flight 93, which crashed on 9/11 in a field near Pittsburgh. He wrote Steps to Peace, a piece of music, 2 days after her death. After playing it that night, he said, I felt as if my daughter was telling me, don't worry, Dad, I'm all right. Just do the right thing. He came on the show in 2002 to talk about a trip to Afghanistan with other 9/11 families. Here's Daryl Bodley performing the composition he wrote for his daughter at his daughter's memorial service, Steps to Peace. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.